And in a moment, Marshall Masters joins us. We will talk about coming catastrophes, Planet X, the late great prophet Edgar Cayce, all of that in a classic Coast to Coast show next. And Marshall Masters has been with us a couple times over the years, author, publisher, internet radio host, founder of Your Own World Books, former CNN science features producer, and also U.S. Army Public Information Officer, specializes in Planet X 1220 research. Marshall sees December 21st, 2012 as a wake-up for humanity, and we shall bring him on right now on Coast to Coast. Marshall, how are you?
Just fine. Thanks for having me on.
It's good. It's good to have you back. It's been a while for me. I know you were on with Rob Simone last year, but it's been a long time. What have you been up to?
Well, last time I was on, we talked about my book, Crossing the Cusp, Surviving the Edgar Cayce Pole Shift. And now I've just put up a video that really provides the backstory for that. And because the formation, the Avebury 2008 formation, is what I call the star map of doom. I've been looking at all kinds of predictions over the years and from all kinds of sources. But this is the one in this one crop circle. It's the one that absolutely unequivocally tells you what's going to happen, exactly what it's going to happen, and exactly where you're going to see it and what it's going to look like. And it's extremely precise.
You've spent a lot of time decoding a lot of things, Marshall, haven't you?
Yes. I'm just a connect-the-dots guy. That's what I love to do.
Well, you do a good job doing that. Let's go back a little bit to Edgar Cayce, one of my favorite late American prophets. How did you get interested in his work?
Well, it was really looking at, in terms of the scenarios of a pole shift, all right? And the scenarios go everything from, the Earth flips head over heels, we stop, we start rotating the other way. All of these predictions are really pretty severe. I mean, if the Earth stops and flips over, I mean, we're back to single-cell animals, I think. What I liked about Edgar Cayce's prophecy was that it really is about a difference of degree as opposed to a difference of kind, so it's not so extreme. Not that changing the Earth's axis by a few degrees is a small thing, because it's going to create a huge slosh. And so I really, when I looked at it and what Cayce was saying, it just simply fit the model of everything that we were seeing.
When Edgar Cayce would talk about Earth changes in his trance-like state, they were pretty darn dramatic. How accurate was he? How accurate has he been? And what things haven't happened yet?
Well, there was, and this was a difficult time for the folks that are the Edgar Cayce proponents, that a lot of them were predicting we would have the pole shift in 2000. I know that in the last, about 20 years ago, Ruth Montgomery and other writers were talking about a pole shift around 2000, and it didn't happen. And the thing about prophecy, and I think you can apply this to everyone that's doing it, if you're looking into the future, you're looking through an extremely long garden hose, or just a very small telescope. You're focusing on something that's in the future. It's going to be distorted, and trying to find a specific time is really difficult. But I think that with prophecy and prediction, my first rule is, always keep it in mind, but don't live in expectation of it. Because if you live in expectation of a prophecy, it sets you up. Because now, when you're looking at everything around you, you're trying to validate or, whatever your expectation is going to be. But if you're just mindful of it, not living in expectation of it, you have a pretty frosty view of things. You're just seeing the world exactly as it is. And here's where prophecy, to me, plays a very vital role, because these people are looking into the future. They're seeing things that are very disturbing. Mm-hmm. They're sharing it with others, and it is an act of love that they're sharing.
They're trying to warn us, aren't they?
Yeah, and for them, it's not like saying Nostradamus doesn't have a vested interest in this, because if we disappear, Nostradamus disappears. In other words, he only lives on as long as we're living on and talking about him, and as long as our species is existing. So I can see where generations in the past, they're looking at, you know, we might not as, might well have not been here if future generations miss this. And so there's this great urge to get it forward, and I see it in a lot of different prophecy from a lot of different places. But again, I don't live in expectation of those predictions. For me, everything's got a level playing field. I look at science, I look at prediction, I look at prophecy, and I'm, what I'm trying to find are patterns. And right now, one of the things that I was watching a rerun last night on TV, and I think this will bring this down to earth.
Okay.
Because people, particularly with Planet X, you know, it's 2012. Why don't we see it? Oh, boy. You know, it's, I love it when people start with, well, it seems logical to me that, or in my humble opinion, mm-hmm. and after that I know, you know, that's it, Harry. Feather one, we're going in, okay? The conversation's going to be difficult. But there is a fabulous show, and you, for those folks that are, you know, that have cable, it's called The Universe. It's on History Channel. You want episode 2 of season 6. It first aired on 11/1/11. And it's Nemesis, the sun's evil twin. Now, when I watch this, I'm wondering who's lifting whose material. Are they lifting my material or am I lifting theirs? Because what they're saying is Nemesis, that we're in a binary system, that Nemesis is a red dwarf. Now, they're not using Nostradamus or predictions or prophecy or anything else. We're talking about born hard science.
Well, and I've heard right? from other astronomers who think, Marshall, that there could be another star here in our solar system.
Absolutely, and that's the point that they're making. Now, the thing that they did in this, which was rather brilliant, was they took the issue head on of, well, if we have a binary twin, why don't we see it? They took that issue on, explained it extremely well. But in the show, what they were saying is that they have found a 26-million-year cycle of cataclysm on the Earth, major extinction.
Huge, yeah.
Huge, huge. And so according to that time scale, we're about 10 million years out. So, you know, eating granola every day is not going to get us there. We won't see it. But
good.
The Harbinger sign, though, and this is really interesting, because the producers took, you know, because you get at that point into the program where the viewer's going to ask that, okay, so, hey, whoa, what's this to me, right? And they're going, the Harbinger sign, the telltale sign that we know that this object is going to be coming back into the system is that it's going to start scattering comets out of the Oort cloud.
Is this what some people have called Planet X, this binary star?
Yes. And we use Planet X simply as a generic term.
Right.
It's, you know, it just, if you think about it, until the telescope was invented, we could only see up to Saturn. All right? And then, as, you know, they got, we started getting telescopes, and the mathematicians were working on the observations and the perturbations. They said, where's the perturber of Saturn? Then they found Uranus. Then from there, Uranus's Planet X was Neptune, and then they went to Pluto. Now, they thought Pluto was Planet X, and that's what they were looking for.
Right, right.
But Pluto just simply didn't have enough mass. It's only about 60% the size of our own moon. So it didn't have enough mass to be the perturber, all right, that they were looking for. So the search keeps going on. But what I find interesting is in the program, what they're saying is 10 million years from now, we'll know that Planet X is coming in because it's going to scatter comets out of the Oort cloud, and they're going to come in, and one or two of them are going to smack into the Earth, like the one that the Chicxulub impact that took out the dinosaurs. Well, what they're finding is, and they report this in the program, they're already seeing the scattering. The comets are being scattered like a bowling ball going out and hitting pins.
Now, we're lucky we haven't been slapped by one.
That's right. That's right. And so the thing here is the hook for this program to what I'm saying in Crossing the Cusp is that the Avebury 2008 formation is telling us that on December 21, 2012, we're going to see a comet-like object. And from the northern hemisphere, if you're standing in the fields of Avebury, you know, just wait for sunset. Look, you know, 45 degrees right, 45 degrees up. Bing, it's going to be there. And when we see it, that's when we know the guacamole hits the fan, because the formation tells us that not only are we going to see the comet, but that there's going to be something's going to happen to make the sun go really violent, where the corona will extend out to the orbit of...
Well, which is funny, Marshall, you say that, because, you know, I just came from a conference this weekend. And one of the things I have predicted now, I was being interviewed by a TV station afterward. I'm convinced that December 21st, 2012, give or take, it's going to be a solar event of some type. And I'm probably not too far off. What do you think?
No, I think you're right on the money. That's exactly what Avebury says it's going to be, is a solar event. And this is what it's always been our concern. You know, there's folks that go, well, Planet X is going to hit Earth. No, it's not going to hit Earth. No, that's just not going to happen. We have to be worried about other things, because an object like that, it's going to come through and it's going to have a debris field.
That's right.
All right. And so it's, you know, it's going to be like a rodeo cowboy parade where, you know, finally at the tail end of the guys with the buckets, right?
All right, well, let's go through this prediction again. And in terms of Avebury 2008, the formation, how did it get there?
Avebury formation, and this formation is nearly the size of four soccer fields complete.
That's huge.
It is absolutely
huge. Two guys couldn't have done it.
Absolutely impossible. Absolutely impossible. This is, first off, it's a two-part formation materialized in 2 days. And what's amazing is not only did it materialize in 2 days, it did so with surgical precision on interlocking the two parts. And the first half of it is what I call the timestamp. It gives us the alignments of the planets for December 21, 2012, the major planets. Then what happens is the prophetic side of it, dealing with the comet that's going to be causing this problem or appearing at the time. It does. Maybe what happens is we see one comet, but the one that hits the sun and causes a massive eruption, we don't see.
Okay.
It's hard to say. So that's the sign. That's when we see that, when we see what looks like a second sun in the sky, that's when we know it's going to get rough.
And are we tracking any of these comets right now?
Well, we have got a lot of stuff up in space. All right. There's a lot of observatories going up into space. Particularly right now, you know, they're looking in that direction. I think what's even more interesting for me is that, you know, for the longest time, all we had up there was SOHO. And SOHO is an old satellite. It's long in the tooth, but it's like an old Timex watch. It takes a lick and keeps on ticking, right? And they keep extending the mission length. But now, the interesting thing is, while they've done that, in 2008, NASA, JAXA, ESA, everybody and his brother is putting solar observatories up into space. And, I mean, I haven't seen an ambitious space program like this, frankly, since Mercury 7 when I was a kid.
They're getting ready for something.
Yes, George. Bingo.
Yep.
And what they're trying to do is they're looking for the sniffle before the sneeze.
Let's go through this prediction one more time, Marshall, before the break then. Go ahead.
Okay. Okay. What I'm saying is that there's a formation appeared in England in August. It was in two parts, about the size of nearly four soccer fields. It says that on December 21, 2012, we're going to see what appears to be a second sun in the sky, and about this time, there is going to be a horrific solar storm, somewhat perhaps similar to the one portrayed in the movie Knowing. And it's going to be devastating for us. And so that's what people need to prepare for is, you know, that solar storm, because the first part of it that comes, it's here in 8 minutes.
Well, the solar storm and Knowing destroyed the planet.
That's absolutely right. And I don't think that we're going to have one that severe, but it is going to be bad, and that people are going to need to know how to get to ground during this particular period. And so there's things that they can do now. You know, in our book, Planet X Forecast, we explain how to create a, you know, a basement Faraday cage and how to shield yourself and how much steel and how much sand that you need to give yourself some kind of defense. Keep in mind, you know, the deep underground military bases are 2 miles down.
And so, yeah, they'll be okay.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, they'll be okay.
2 miles down, they should be.
Yeah, but what about all the tectonic activity? The lithosphere is going to be rocking and rolling. And, yeah, they might survive the blast, but what happens afterwards when, you know, the Earth is... the analogy I use is like the sun is the stovetop and the Earth is the teacup.
Would you be surprised if nothing happened during this time period?
I would hope it. I mean...
Well, I would too, but I mean, would it shock you if nothing happened? Or are you expecting it?
I'm not expecting it. I'm aware and keeping my mind open for it. I am planning and preparing, and I'm saying that others, that's the wise thing to do, plan and prepare, especially now while things are available at a reasonable price on the shelf.
All right, we've got on our Twitter feed, by the way, a picture of the Avebury 2008 formation that Marshall is talking about. It is huge. Who made it, Marshall? Like you said that humans couldn't do it. Who did it?
This is purely extraterrestrial. There's no question about it. I have been following...
Truly like the movie Knowing, then.
Yes, yes. I mean, this is... Someone is sending us a message, and what they're doing is circumventing control mechanisms, governments that are suppressing message. They're trying to get out to us, and it's kind of like hailing on all frequencies. And I really got started with this back in 2002, Crabwood, with the alien holding the disc.
Right.
And that prompted me to start the Sagan Continuation Project with the help of Maurice Osborne, who decoded that, did a very good job of it. And that formation, there's no way it could have been a hoax formation because it had three-dimensional relief. If you were looking at the pictures, you could see that it was actually the formation was created to render a three-dimensional effect.
Why send us a message in a crop formation?
Because it's the only way they can reach the people by getting around the government control.
They're convinced governments won't say anything to us.
Well, I'm saying that because
I don't think
what we're
will.
Seeing is outright suppression. And there's a lot of people kind of think about it. When you talk about crop circles to people, what's the first thing they say? Oh, yeah, a couple of guys with planks and boards. All right? Folks have been programmed to do that. The thing about crop circles is if you are going to accept the proposition that an intelligence other than our own creates these things, then you will have done what the UFO community has failed to do yet, which is to get a yeah.
All right, stay with us, Marshall. We're going to take this quick break and roll right back with you on Coast to Coast AM. Well, I had a great time this weekend at the Alchemy event in Los Angeles. About 250 coast-to-coast enthusiasts showed up for those events that lasted all weekend and went really well. More events coming up. You can track my schedule by going to our calendar section, which you'll find out at the bottom of the homepage on coasttocoastam.com. I've got a book signing event coming up in Venice, California, We've got a couple Skype events coming up for you, a major event in Toronto that I'm going to be speaking at with Stanton Friedman and Michael Cremo. So just simply track where I go and when I go by going to coasttocoastam.com. Go all the way down to the bottom and click my calendar schedule. Welcome back with Marshall Masters. Marshall, in addition to the Avebury Formation, don't they also have, like, monoliths, also some stone structures?
Well, the one structure I think that's interesting that would relate to my research is the Georgia Guidestone.
Right.
And because the Georgia Guidestones, I mean, of course, everybody knows about it. They know that it's the Ten Commandments of the 21st century. According to somebody else, somebody new, and it's in eight different languages, the first one being keep humanity under half a billion. And we're at 7 billion now, so, I mean, it's like this is saying, all right, imagine it's a tour bus, typical tour bus, about 45 people, all right? And it stops. Three people get off, and then the tour bus goes on and goes off a cliff. That's really what it's saying, is that that's the kind of loss of life that we're going to look at. But it doesn't say how we get there. So to me, what the Georgia Guidestones is really doing is saying secret societies have known what's coming for a long time. And now they're trying to get the message out. I see a lot of folks trying to get this message out, and in their own ways, they have different ways of explaining it. But it all kind of concentrates back to the same thing, and that is that we're facing something here. And on December 21, 2012, you know, there's a lot of...
Or on or around, I guess, right?
On or around. To me, I think the one significance of that date is that it's a unique alignment that could have been foretold in the past. And stop and think about it. The Mayan calendar is, depending on how you want to round the fourth decimal point, is just as accurate as an atomic clock. And so with that accuracy, what they did was they completely leapfrogged. You don't have to say, well, is it this calendar? Is it that calendar? Is it that other calendar? Do we add a year, subtract a day? No, it's the celestial date. And that's it. It focuses. But the same thing, the Hopi, what are they looking for? They're looking for a double retrograde of Venus, certain celestial alignments in the sky at a certain time in their ceremonies. So what's happening is that when we look at the folklore and predictions of ancient indigenous cultures, they're using this time as you know, as a marker, as a clearly identifiable marker for future generations. And the rest of it, we can dwell on. But the key thing here is that there is so much of it. And, you know, everyone's expecting 2012 to be bad. This is when it hits. My position has always been, you know, if this is a rock concert, 2012 is the warm-up band. The headline act is going to hit in 2013 and 2014.
Even worse?
Oh, yeah. That's when it gets really bad. Because what I see is we're going to have the solar storms. And what the, you know...
Will it take off the grid at this point?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
The grid's gone. Grid's toast. Now, and this is not me talking. All right, National Academy of Sciences, and this was almost like a year.
And this is a planetary-wide problem. It's not just here.
Absolutely. It's something where we have to really worry about it because what they're saying just for the United States alone, 100 million Americans could be without power for many months. The consequences for the third world are going to be catastrophic because they're the tail-end Charlies on getting this new equipment installed. So they could be 2 or 3 years before they have power again. And we live in a just-in-time world where we have, you know, these $50 a day or 50 cent a day workers in these third world countries where they're not going to be able to have access to power to supply those lines. So we might bounce back sooner, but economically we're really going to get hosed. And, you know, go back to think what happened with the Fukushima incident, what happened in Japan. That shut down production lines around the world. It had a direct impact.
Oh, sure, it did. It was like a domino effect.
It was a absolutely. And so, and the thing here is that as a catastrophism researcher, you know, I look at the cycle of empires and how it applies here. Empires always have the same cycle, and it's in three phases. First phase is it rises up quickly as everybody gets a piece of the pie. There's a little bit for everyone. It, you know, it's a rising tide, floats all boats kind of situation. But then it reaches a power base where elites can then consolidate control, and then what they're doing is they start draining control, power, and resources, wealth, out of the entire system. And then what happens is the system degrades because it loses its vitality. We're seeing this now with this wealth transfer, all right, that everyone's talking about. And the rich are getting richer, and there's the poor, and you have Occupy Wall Street, and it's, you know, it's the 1%, the 99%, the wealthy are living in these little bubble enclaves. And the net effect of it, though, is that the society as a whole loses its vibrancy and its ability to bounce back from something heavy. You know, the National Association of Civil Engineers has rated our infrastructure as a D. Okay? We have all kinds of problems out there. And we have bridges, roads, things that are just falling apart. And it's this would be the time to fix it because, really, you know, the money is cheap to borrow this stuff and get it done and get it fixed. But why fix it if you know
it's going to crumble down again?
Absolutely. And even more so, why fix it if you know what's coming?
Well, you know, it's like your car. You got a car, you're going to be selling it, right? You're going to trade it in. If you're going to trade it in, you probably, you know, aren't going to make the kind of repairs you normally would make if you kept it.
Or if you knew you were going to drive it off a cliff.
Yeah. You know? Preferably yeah. Without you in it.
Yeah, that makes a little difference. Yeah. And but it's I'm seeing it from an empire standpoint, and we're really, I mean, all the hallmarks of Rome. You know, we're heavily in debt. The middle class is disaffected. We have mercenaries. We're all, you know, fighting for us and other adventures. All of these problems that attended the fall of the Roman Empire, we're making the same mistakes right now.
Well, you spent
the vitality of the country's being drawn out. So we're just more susceptible to taking a whack.
Marshall, you spent 3 years, didn't you, looking at the Avebury Formation?
Absolutely.
3 years.
And 3 years, and I got to tell you, aside from about a period of about 18 hours, most of it was hitting a wall. And the reason why it took so darn long to decode it was that I was working with a group of researchers. We had people coming and going from the group. We were all studying it, and they're all doing marvelous job. These are engineers, physicists, people from different disciplines. And as groups tend to do, you know, you want to, what's the other guy doing, all right, and what are we seeing? And so the problem we were having was we couldn't come to a consensus as a group. No matter how I changed the dynamics, how we came back to it, it was like Harry Truman said about economists. If you laid them all end to end, they point in every direction. And
it's like a consultant.
Yeah, that's right. And we just couldn't win for losing, and I, you know, was getting frustrated. And then there was just amazing little thing. It was completely unrelated, but it took me to there. There was, in 2010, there was an Anunnaki crop circle that appeared in Avebury, you know, and probably just about a 20-minute walk away from the field where the Avebury 2008 Star Map of Doom formation had appeared. And what caught my attention about this was that there was somebody was redirecting traffic, paying extremely high dollars to get premium link position, first page on the page. So when people were looking for that formation, What happened was, instead of going to the actual formation on the crop circle connector site, where they needed to see it, it was redirecting them to an obscure, completely unrelated formation that was, you know, just a little circle thing. It was nothing. And to a commentary page there that said, a very 2010 Anunnaki symbol is a hoax without any substantiation and some dribble. So I looked at that, and I worked in the computer business for 23 years. My clients included Oracle, Sun Microsystems, Lockheed Martin, AT&T. My specialties, you know, amongst all my specialties, was very heavy internet, particularly in the data centers. And so I understand this stuff. I read it like matrix code. I could see exactly what was happening with this redirect. I understand AdWords, how Google works. I use AdWords. I use AdSense. So I'm very familiar with all of this stuff, and I could scope it out. And I knew that someone was paying an awful lot of money to redirect traffic off of this to an unrelated commentary page. Well, to the credit of Mark Fusel and Stuart Dyke, who run Crop Circle Connector, and that is a fabulous site. I call it a benchmark site because it's the one you compare the others with. There's a lot of great sites, but Crop Circle Connector, in my book, is the one I always go to first. And I wrote them, and I said, here's what's happening, fellas. And so what they did, which was really cool, was that they went to this other person, that had, this group that had put this up. And all they had provided was a link to a German website in German, and it was indecipherable. And said, this is what Masters is saying. Instead of them responding to us and explaining anything, they just called us names and huffed off. And at that point, I knew it was a disinfo operation, and we'd blown it, which then gave me the clue as to why I was having the problem, why it was taking us so darn long to decode Avebury 2008, was because all of my researchers, I went back, I mean, got tons and tons of documents on this that we acquired, was that the stuff that we were seeing uniquely was solid. It was when we were trying to relate what we were seeing with the commentary that was being posted on the page on Crop Circle Connector that we were going down rabbit holes. And then we identified a couple of them that were clearly steering. There were some little changes, and I had snapshots going back, and there were some oddball things about it. But at that point, what I understood was that disinformation operatives and what people need to understand is about 80% of the disinformation on Planet X and crop circles is actually coming out of the Crown. That's the city state in London, in that area. That's where the biggest generator of disinformation. After that, you have the United States and Australia pretty much doing the rest of it, and a little bit of dribble here and there elsewhere. But that's where it's really coming out of, is the city state of the Crown in England. And once I understood that we were up against, let's say, unreliable commentary, I said, fine, if it's tainted, throw it all out.
Intentional, wasn't it? It's intentional.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because, again, go back. If we are to admit that these things are being made, as I believe, by an extraterrestrial intelligence, then that proves what the UFO community has been trying to prove with mountains and mountains and mountains of evidence.
What if, Marshall, this planet was alive? Okay, the Gaia theory. It's an organism, but it thinks, it reasons. What if it's trying to communicate with us this way? Possible?
You know, I've never really thought. That never occurred to me. But now that you say it, why not?
Why not? That it knows, it feels, it can sense.
Well, listen to what the Native Americans are telling us. All right? And all the indigenous people. We're hurting the Earth Mother. That, you know, there is a consciousness there. I mean, anybody that's watched Avatar, you know, AWA.
Yeah.
And if we can dream that up, then why couldn't it be so? All right?
And so that's a distinct possibility. I could not rule that out.
Neither could I. Neither could I. And as a matter of fact, I would like to think it is that way, that it is our Earth talking to us, because we're not terribly good stewards. You know, I mean, we're just, that's what really bothers me the most, is I know that we have these natural calamities coming, but what we're doing is, it's just making it 10 times worse. It's like, you know, turning cocaine into crack cocaine.
How many people will prepare, but will simply take the hit and panic afterwards?
Oh,
most of them?
Well, I'm seeing different groups, all right? For about a year, I started taking telephone orders and when I was selling books. I really was using it as to, well, what's happening out there in America? You know, I mean, it's hard for me to sit here, and I'm talking, and it's one way, and it's outbound. I wanted to talk to some of the people who are on the receiving end. And here's some of the groups I found. First off, you know, CNN reported that there's a 300% increase in the number of bunkers being built in the country. And when I heard them report that, I laughed so hard I almost fell out of my chair, because I'm seeing much bigger numbers. I am talking to the guys that are building the systems, building these bunkers, and we're not talking about Quonset huts out in the backyard with some dirt on them and a honey bucket where everybody's got to sit there and, you know, listen and smell. We're talking about, these are deep underground condominiums.
They're like little cities, aren't they?
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely self-contained, you know, Blu-ray, DVD.
Who gets movies, them?
Huh?
Who gets them?
Everybody that can afford them. And this is, you know, I mean, to be frank, the ones that are building them are the ones that have really benefited from the Bush tax cut. They're taking that savings and they're funneling it down into these bunkers, which are entry-level, mind you. Entry-level.
And were they scattered all around the country?
Scattered all around the country, about $500,000 entry level. Typically, they're running $1 to $2 million. And
each.
A big reason each. That's right. Just these, and I'm talking about single. I'm not talking about a community where they're having a whole lot of people in a condominium type situation. I'm talking about a single private underground bunker.
Now, those are the ones. How long would you stay in this bunker?
These people are building these things with sufficient water, air management, food, everything for at least a period of 1 year.
1 year.
As much as 2 years.
Some kind of generating system for its own power?
Everything they need for at least a year, all right, and if not more. What I find interesting is one of the reasons why they jump from $500,000 to $1 million real fast is that if it's a $1 million project, it's because whoever's doing it is specifying that the crews have to come from 300 to 500 miles away from the construction site, and they bring them in at night, so they have absolutely no way to know where they are. They just keep them out there, do the work, and then truck them out. Because if you're down in a bunker and there's been a local carpenter, you know, bricklayer or someone that was involved in the project, and they're up on top and they're hungry and they're starved, they're going to know where your bunker is.
They might even have a key.
That's right.
You never know. Marshall, stay with us. We're going to take this quick break. We are at the top of the hour already. We will be back with Marshall Masters, his new work, Crossing the Cusp. And also, he's got a video out, which we'll talk a little bit about when we come back. That has to do with his binary star system. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.